And we are live for Discovery Paranormal for ghost stories tonight. So, when you hear the word ghost, and I like using that word because it pisses off a lot of people that call themselves paranormal investigators. And I love it because, number one, don't take yourself too seriously, really. Number two, yeah, ghost, spirit, whatever you want to call them, entities, beings from beyond, whatever, man. They are what they are, right? And when people go out into the field, or these people who think, there's two types of paranormal investigators, right? People who are serious and people who are not serious. The ones who aren't serious are curious and they want to go into an empty building, walk around, goof around, act like whatever, and then, you know, have a story to tell if they hear a scratch on the wall or whatever, some stupid thing. Then you have the paranormal investigators who are serious, who are actually into collecting data. They go out there, they do their investigations. It's more for their own personal knowledge and also then to share it with other people, saying, look at what we've collected and look at this, right? The ones that I laugh at are the ones who kind of go into these situations and they act all like tough, try to, you know, cross their arms and, you know, bark in orders, like trying to provoke. And, you know, if I was a spirit, I wouldn't want to talk to those guys. You're yelling back, acting like some, like the bouncer showed up, you know, yeah, the bouncer's here. Guess we got to go. You will talk to me. That's the kind of person I'd push down the stairs. If I was an entity, I would be that one. You know, like, oh my God, there's a burning sensation. Yeah. Oh, it's been scratched from head to toe. You know, yeah, that'd be the one. You want to motivate them to get the hell out of there, man. But I've, like, me personally, I've done a lot of investigations, right? And I learned a lot of things. And they're all different. Some of them share similar things, but mainly they're all different, you know. And everybody is, right? Everybody is. So people are different in this world. But I'm more interested in things like the science aspect of why mirrors tend to hold spiritual activity or spirits. And this is a well-known thing in the paranormal world, is the mirrors. And, you know, there's a lot of people that look into a mirror and they get bugged out because they're ugly. They don't look like they see themselves. They're like, ah! No, I mean, there's a lot of people who say mirrors hold these things. I was in the antique business, and I've run to 1,000 people who told me stories. And out of that 1,000, maybe 100 people had mirror stories. And then it's more like, oh, they bought a mirror from an antique store or at a garage sale, and they brought it home and started seeing all kinds of weird stuff in the mirror, the people and things and whatever. And you would think it's just a mirror, but it's not just a mirror. And ancient civilizations have used mirrors to connect like portals, you know. So I'm going to read this to you because I think it's very, 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 very interesting. Now, the Maya, you know, famous for all kinds of ancient Maya stuff. The Maya believed there were multiple worlds in addition to the human world. Portals connected these worlds and allowed active engagement between the Maya and their gods, right? Like a FaceTime type of thing. Without portals and the ability to communicate between the worlds, the Maya belief system could not function. So they put a lot of weight into mirrors, right? Evidence suggests that the Maya believed reflective surfaces, mirrors, and water surfaces were portals to spiritual worlds, right? So it's really an examination of the mirrors and the portrayal of mirrors as portals in the Maya culture. They put so much stock into it, right? So I like it when things work out well for people. You know that? When people can connect good energy and things work out really well, it puts you on a nice high level of feeling and being, you know? And it's interesting that, you know, as Taoists, no matter what culture, you know, you say whatever culture or wannabe religion, you know, no matter what, they all rely on mirrors for scrying or doing something supportive of that, right? So it's more about that connection and communication. So did they believe in it? Yeah. Did it work for them? I guess it did. What came about? What was the culmination of all this? I don't know. Because in my world, whatever I do is what I've done. And the culmination of what I do is more my collective works, right? And where I want to be, at what place. That sound confusing? It's all, we're all the same. We're all on our own journey, period. That's the whole basis of Buddhism. That Buddha left his woman, left his kid, went out there out of the palace, saw people suffering. He said, life is suffering. Not for him, for others. But he wanted to experience the suffering. He felt like he needed to be one-on-one with that, right? And then he cast aside his wife and kid and all this stuff going on in the palace and went out there and to roam around, you know? And then he wanted to understand man's suffering and, you know, he got into a depressive state. If you read it really into it, you know, of what, you know, I think that he just didn't really understand why people had to suffer. And then some people had it really good like him and everybody in his palace. Although he was destined to the throne and he was about to become king and he was going to be king over like 17 different lands, which is a vast area with a lot of people. If he was king, he'd be able to single-handedly work things and reduce the suffering of those people. So rather than go out on the mission, leaving his woman and child behind and then out there in the world, and he finally found his fig tree. And then he said all these things were coming at him to, you know, things that were calling him back, I guess probably his guilt too. Well, the woman and God and the kid. Plus he had like all those consorts. I don't know, 100, 200, 500, whatever. It's just interesting to me that it all ends up with a mirror, you know, even him. But yes, he was in front of the fig tree and just sitting there meditating. All these demons and whatever were coming at him, and he did his thing, and then that's it. They asked him to be, other people came to him, asked him to be a teacher. And then it's kind of funny because he accepted, but earlier he said that we're all on our own mission. It's not something you can teach. And then he accepted this position that he's going to go around being a teacher, whatever. You know what? It's a great story. And I love figs. And I could eat and snack on figs while the world's falling apart, because that's what I've got going on. But it doesn't mean you have that or anybody else. And it doesn't really matter because we're all individuals. That's what the essence of living your own life is, right? Not having people tell you what to do or try to conform you, but more of you being yourself and opening yourself up to the world. It's like that. So in comes spiritual energy. So if there are ghosts, and I've seen them, I've got pictures of them, I know there are, right? Then what we are is what they are, and what's what we'll become, and what we were. You get it? It's a cycle of life. So very interesting, and I want to share another thing with you later on that's a little more scientific than this. But go back to the Egyptians. Go back to every big culture, and those mirrors stand strong. And it's more about they want to bring about some kind of change. But do you believe in that? I mean, do you believe in even, like, what do people learn from ghost hunting? What do people learn from anything? You know, oh, you see a flame, you touch the flame, you burn your hand, you learn it hurt, and the it's a flame and it's hot, right? it's instant knowledge. Whether people do it again is up to them. But for most people, they would understand something about it. So when I got into ghost hunting, I wanted to know, first of all, this is how it happened. You want to know how it happened? Gather around your computer, everybody. I'm going to sit there, cover yourself with a little blanket, and I'm going to have a sip of my nice old Pike's Place coffee. Starbucks, man, you know? This is the deal. I was living on Long Island in a terrible relationship and basically taking care of her kids, who that was the only joyful part. It was actually going out and going to museums and doing stuff and whatever. But when she was around, it was like terrorist, bang. Unhappy person, unhappy with themselves. And you'll never make unhappy people happy, no matter how hard you try. I will say that to all of you right now. So this is the deal. I'm sitting there in despair. Didn't want to be down there. I was raised on Long Island. It really was a place I didn't want to go back to. You know, I'm in love with the wide open spaces. I have to say it like that. And when you have wide open spaces, it's very difficult to go back to a little tightly wrapped, paranoid, in a hurry community. Long Islanders are the most amazing people you'll ever meet. They're always impatient, in a hurry, angry all the time to get somewhere. But they're the same people who will sit in bumper-to-bumper traffic for 4 hours to go 10 miles. That's your average Long Islander. And those are, to me, that's the most obedient person on the planet, that you are trained to bumper-to-bumper, right? Ugh. You would think they'd fix that, but they don't. Anyway, and it is fixable, by the way. This is the deal. So I'm in despair, and then I'm watching television, which is something that I hadn't really done all that much, you know, yes and no. And then there's these TAPS guys, right? The paranormal research, what do they call themselves? The Atlantic, whatever, Pacific, the Atlantic paranormal, whatever they are. Those guys, and I don't hate on them. They are what they are. They were Roto-Rooter guys, and they had this thing about doing ghost hunting, and apparently they had done it for multiple years before television knew about it. You know, the only reason why they got paid attention to was because at one time there was the Family Channel. I don't know if it still exists. They started showing these people going through buildings, you know, doing investigations half-assed, sordidly, and then getting scared and running out. And they had, like, you know, the whole Blair Witch camera pointing up at their faces. And they're, oh, right. And there was also a show from England about this guy. Well, he was a medium. They're kind of cool, you know. You know, English people. They're good actors, good with theatrics, that type of thing. And I'm not saying that they falsified things or whatever. I'm just saying that they ran an interesting show, you know. So anyway, with all that going on, at this point, it was just the TAPS guys that I was watching. And then there was another show, Paranormal State. I never even watched one episode. You know, I saw some commercials for it, and the guy looked like, you know, he walked out of a morgue, and he kind of pushed that image of the death and the dark and whatever. Okay. And people interview me about my show, you know, the Discovery Paranormal show, American Ghost Hunters, and the shows that I've done. They always kind of try to focus on that. And I say the show is not about death. It's actually about life and how you live your life. You know, the ones who focus on a death angle, the death is just the end of that human body. It has nothing to do with the spirit. You know, it's an ending of a cocoon, basically, of a spirit that is now free and gets maybe recycled. I mean, if you believe in reincarnation, I do, and I know a lot of people that do. But whatever it is what it is, right? And you can't change it. Nobody gets out of here alive. No, don't forget that ever. Not man nor beast. So it's a matter of how you live your life and how you treat yourself and treat others and what kind of person you are in essence, right? So I'm sitting there in despair watching these Taps guys thinking like, you know, these guys for real. A lot of the show was claptrap. It was just them running wires, taping things down, showing we're into safety, which is cool, but it was too much. You don't need that many minutes into safety. You know, maybe a 20, 30 second clip kind of shows it all. But then, you know, these guys watching TV sets and all that other stuff, but mainly also those guys arguing. There might have been 20 minutes worth of usable ghost hunting footage on there. 20 minutes, really. The rest of it was he said, she said, all this drama. It was kind of like Jerry Springer drama brought together with ghosts, right? So I wanted to do a show. Like, I watched this enough, and I'm like, first of all, is it real? And if it's real, I want to do a show. Because all you need, apparently, is just a camera. And a couple people. People who understand what they're doing, at least. So, cameras I had access to an entire television station at the time. So, that, no worries. And then I put an ad out on Craigslist looking for a ghost hunter. So, and I found one. My friend Pete, who said he had a local group, and I said, I'm interested in doing a show of just, you know, walk around, see what we can find, do some stuff. Sure. And then he, I got the first gig, which was a local theater. They called the Hangar Theater in Ithaca. And then these people contacted me. I took an ad out in Craigslist. That's when Craigslist was cool, you know, before it was what it is now. I took an ad out and I was just like, you know, we're ready to believe you, type of stuff. And these people contacted me from the Hangar Theater and they said, you know, there's a ghost of a pilot who's there because it used to be an airplane hangar way back in the day. So they've seen this ghost. They've got all this information. But I knew somebody whose daughter died in a car accident right down the road from there. And I knew that she had a lot to do with that theater and that she worked there. There's things that I didn't know that I found out because of the investigation. I won't talk about out of respect for the family, you know. But so I went in there with Pete, and Pete's got these dowsing rods. And that was my first experience with dowsing rods ever, you know. And I wasn't sure if I believed in the science. I need to believe it. You know what I mean? So I didn't tell Pete about the girl dying in the car accident. You know, and I wanted to see what had happened walking around there. And I've always been, very sensitive myself, and I could feel things around. I don't tell a lot of people that, you know, it was something that I've always kept in my life, actually, until just recently, you know. But it's just, you know, we all have abilities, and they are what they are. Anyway, so I'm in there doing my thing. Pete's in there doing his thing. Then we're going around together, and I'll tell you, I captured this one image, like that night when I went through the photos, you know, and I saw this guy standing, like looked like he had his arm on his hip with his wearing a hat, and he looked like you like see his facial features and his body. I was like, oh my God, like what are the chances of going out first time and capture an image like this? That's crazy, right? So I sent Pete the image and he was like, oh my God, look at that. I'm like, we got to go back and see what the deal is. I wanted to see from that vantage point what I was looking at, what the camera was looking at, and see if I could recreate the image. And wouldn't you know, it was really three images all brought together. It was a pile of linen that was up on a gangway, like up high. It was a basket light, like a blur that kind of came down. And then there was like another thing in between. So it was like three things. And I was like disappointed, but I was like, okay, at least we like debunked it and whatever. And that's where our heads were at. Like, want to prove it. Like, it's not just, hey, this is what it is. And boom, you know, you have to believe it. You know, we're not asking for anybody to believe anything. So, but later on, we're doing our you know, our thing, scooping around, going back to the investigation. And we did capture, you know, Pete had set up these cameras that were infrared. And one of them captured some kind of shadow figure walking past, which is kind of interesting. And the both of us were on the other side of the place. We were the only ones in there, you know. This was backstage. This is where people had seen the apparition, you know, which is why they called us in there to begin with. So then we get to this one section, just a corner of the place, and Pete's dowsing rods pointed right at the corner. And he said, there's something here. And they really, no matter where we walked, they were pointing, you know. I'll tell you, no matter what you think of dowsing rods, I mean, I've come to trust him, with Pete using them anyway. Yes and no answers, and he can find things. We've done investigations where I hid stuff and wanted him to find it. And these things pointed right to frick where it was. I mean, that's pretty amazing. So pointed at the corner, started asking questions. And during the questions, you know, I asked if that was so-and-so, you know, the guy's daughter, I know. And a dowsing rods crossed and said, yes. And so I said, did you die in a car accident? And the dowsing rod said, yes. And now Pete didn't know this because I didn't tell him this. I said, did you drown? And the dowsing rod said, yes. And Pete's face was all weirded out because he's not controlling the dowsing rods. They're doing their business. He's got the feeling going through him, but you know, in his mind, you know, this person got into a car accident, but then they drowned, you know, and there was no, I mean, there's a lake pretty close by, but this is not where we're talking about. But what happened is that this girl was driving and she had hit the guardrail when the road just started to curve up, right? And she rode the guardrail and got flipped over into a ditch that normally holds maybe a foot of water or something. On this occasion, you know, there had been a lot of storms, so there was a lot of water, you know, in there. So she get flipped upside down, went into the water, and she drowned, you know. So she answered it correctly in the dowsing rods. I was like, wow. And she confirmed names of people that were close to her and associated with her, you know. But it made sense to me that if she had just left that place and then she went and she died, you know, 200 feet down the road, that's the place where she would have went back. That was the place that she would have known and went back to. And she was working there that night, you know, doing tickets and all that. I mean, she was a volunteer in the place. So that was the beginning. That was my beginning and understanding the other world, and there's more than one. People tend to say the other side. I mean, there's lots and lots of sides, you know, lots and lots and lots. So in this particular thing, it was what she remembered. And that's not the first time we ran into that. We ran into that a lot. We did a train crash, 99 year anniversary train crash in Manchester, New York. And the train went down to the gully. I think killed like 29 people, and we went to where the train crashed. Then we went back to the place that it was last. I mean, the station that it pulled into, where people actually were able to get off and, you know, use the facilities and all that. So, I mean, that was like a 200,000 square foot, literally 200,000 square foot building. It was where they turned the trains. It was called the Roundhouse. It's huge, unbelievably giant building, and a building with buildings and buildings. Because they had a thing where they turned the trains, where other trains had parked. So you imagine, it's a pretty large space. And we had been contacted by somebody who was in there drinking beers with his friend, partying. They said out of nowhere, out of the dark, and there was a wall there too. Something threw a chain at the one guy because he was mocking the dead. And when he did that, something threw a chain and it hit him in the back of the head and his back of his neck. And they all ran the hell out of there. And that's what's funny too about paranormal experiences. You know that they're different because it feels different. It doesn't feel like, hey, someone just chucked a thing at me. It feels like something else chucked this thing at me. So that's interesting too. But have you ever heard about the Lemp Mansion, right? So many guests have reported seeing paranormal phenomenon in the mirrors of the Lemp Mansion. It's not unusual for the Lemp for two guests to look into the mirror and see a third unfamiliar face peering back out. Many believe that the mirrors are portals to the other side, and ghosts use mirrors as gateways to cross over to dimensions to ours. So, and this belief goes back thousands and thousands of years. So it's funny to see people trying to debunk mirrors because you just simply don't know, you know? So, I mean, for an example, during the Victorian era, families would cover the mirrors in their homes during times of mourning. You know, it's a Jewish tradition to actually cover mirrors and or turn them around. They also do that, you know. So covering mirrors with a black cloth was done out of respect for the dead, but also to prevent the spirit of the deceased loved one from being trapped in our dimension. Trapped in a mirror, right? Many have also seen spirits in the mansion's basement mirrors, and there are two mirrors in the basement that are on opposite walls facing each other. Ooh. The seemingly endless reflection seen in these two mirrors is known as the infinity effect, of course. And because the same reflection seems to go on forever many times, in the infinity effect, people have seen an extra figure in one of the distant reflections. Nobody knows for sure why this happens. And you're not supposed to put mirrors opposite windows. You know what? But for the people that had those experiences, I mean, this is one, like, you know, it's cool to investigate those things and what the origin is of the contact. When you go into a situation where there's paranormal activity, and I'm saying ghost activity, not just paranormal, like UFOs or some Sasquatch running through your house. I'm talking about ghosts here, right? Spiritual activity anyway. So when you have these situations, people go through all kinds of emotions because it's pure emotions is what you're feeling. You know, sometimes the contact's good, sometimes the contact is bad, you know, but it's good to investigate the history and the particulars around the contact, you know, see what's going on and what happened on that property, right? Bring people in who are good at what they do. They're, you know, like the mediums or psychics, you know, ones that have some kind of an idea of what they're doing. I mean, there's a lot of charlatans out there too, yeah? So, people contact me and they ask, they think their house is haunted and they want to know. I mean, they feel like they're being watched when they're alone. You ever feel that? Like you're sitting there? That was that house on Long Island. That's another thing. So, the house on Long Island had like a four-season room that was all windows, right? So that's where the TV was, and that's where we spent the majority of your time, you know. You actually felt like you were kind of outside, so it was cool. And then the view as I'm watching the TV to the right goes to a large doorway. There were like, what do they call French doors, you know, which were open all the time, basically. And then, you know, into the living room there. And then there was an archway that went to where the staircase was that went upstairs. As I'm sitting there watching this ghost show, the Taps guys, I'm seeing a shadow figure walk through that doorway, like the arched one, constantly. It, like, in my peripheral vision, it pulled me to look. And at this point, you know, I wasn't a paranormal investigator. I wasn't doing any of that. I was just making an observation. And I've seen shadow figures before. I saw a cat that we used to have. And, you know, my mom and my sister had to put the cat down. And then, like, I don't know, 20 minutes after they had left, maybe 30 minutes after, I guess, when it happened, I saw that cat's shadow run past me I was outside and it ran inside. And then I kept seeing it inside the house. And then 3 months later, I told my mom the story because we were talking about ghosts and whatever. And she saw the same thing and she didn't say anything to me. That was kind of funny. So I started seeing this thing. And then I'm wondering, like, if witnessing paranormal occurrences on television, on the internet, bringing that energy in can affect your own home space and what goes on where you are. So it was about a year later. I was back upstate New York and off Long Island, right? And I had my apartment. I'm sitting there watching. It was Halloween night. I was watching those guys in England. The guy that, you know, got the real theatrical dude. And they're at the London Bridge. They were doing a Halloween ghost hunt at the London Bridge. They're actually going around the different locations. It was real cool. And, you could do it on the internet and follow them and also on television. So I had it on TV. I had it on the internet. And, people are writing different things. I was kind of just checking it out. And then at one point, this guy gets all possessed. And he's like, ooh, making weird faces. I was like, ooh. Which looks even creepier in the whole black and white type of effect from infrared, infrared cameras. So when this happened in my kitchen, I had this metal broom, right? And the metal broom was standing up and leaning in an area in front of my sink, kind of where it couldn't have fallen by itself. I'll say that. Could not have fallen by itself. Impossible. I had my cat. He was hanging out with me. And then this broom that I have, like, slammed to the ground. I heard boom. And really was like, it sounded like it was thrown to the ground with velocity. It didn't sound like something like, la, 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 I'm going to fall over onto the floor. You know? So I was like, what the hell is that? And it was more about the way I felt. I felt this weird feeling, and then at the same time, all these people start writing on the web that they're experiencing these phenomenon in their home. There was a couple hundred people, like, literally writing that this just happened, that just happened. So I'm thinking, like, sometimes, energy doesn't die. Energy keeps moving around. It does this thing. It transforms, right? But I'm thinking, like, here's a situation where you have these mass amount of people all tying into this energy, and then something happens, and all these people start having experiences. I mean, that's a shared experience. That's something that it didn't matter how far or what time zone it was in. It mattered that it all happened at that one time, right? Which was very interesting, and I've been, like, studying things like that, since. So, but, to sometimes people that are sitting there and they feel a change of temperature around them gets really, like cold, a cold spot. There are investigators out there that feel that when these entities try to manifest themselves, they draw from the thermal energy that's in the air and cause that cold spot, right? So sometimes household objects mysteriously disappear, then reappear, and then reappear in different places. I know a guy lost his coffee grinder. He went out in the morning, coffee grinder was gone. He looked and looked and looked for 2 weeks, looked all around. Then I'm like, do you sleepwalk? And this is a guy that we had helped multiple occasions who has an unbelievably active haunted house, right? In fact, we got some of our best full body apparition pictures because of the dude. So he could tell me anything and I'd believe it because, yeah, it does happen to him. So your coffee grinder is missing. And you look in the cabinets. He said he looked all over the house, right? And I'm like, well, maybe your mom took it to someone. She is, like, over 80 years old, and she had kind of dementia, but she didn't really wander into the kitchen. But you never know, right? Anyway, this went on for a couple of weeks, and boom. He said he wakes up again. Coffee grinder is right back exactly where it was, plugged in the whole bit. And it's a phenomenon, right? Is he crazy? Maybe. Is the coffee grinder possessed? Could be, right? But the fact of the matter is, he believed it happened. And he couldn't grind coffee beans for 2 weeks because he didn't have a coffee grinder. So you hear about these things. I hear, you know, keys, that's easy. People misplace their keys all the time, right? But the stuff where you know you left it where it belongs and nobody came to mess with it, that's the difference, you know. So, and what about hearing unexplained whispers? You ever get that? Or footsteps, thuds, someone calling your name? You get that a lot in that twilight sleep, that lucid, you know, sort of lucid. When you're in that precog state, like kind of, you know, in between two worlds almost, there are conversations that you'll have. You wake up saying things, you know, talking to somebody. And some of those dreams stand out so real. Some of them are just dreams, right? Plain old dreams. You dream all kinds of weird stuff. But sometimes you feel like there's an intended purpose, especially with people that you don't know, the people that you don't recognize who come to you in a dream. There are others that'll say that that's your brain piecing faces together, making it what it is. But what's the purpose of it? Why would your face want to do that? I mean, and you know, if your brain is going to designate something, it's going to be on more what you know than what you don't know, or trying to make up what you don't know using your imagination type of thing, right? But you don't know. And sometimes you wake up, sometimes I wake up saying people's names and I forget them right away. So I literally wake up and write it down with a pen and paper and I research it. I look it up. Nothing ever comes up or whatever. Who knows why that exists, you know? And if they're giving me a message, it ain't working. Because I don't know what the hell it is. All I know is I'm writing down their name when I wake up like a nut. Yeah, like a nut. Sometimes you feel like a nut. Seeing shadows, shadow movements, man. The second place Pete and I did was the Eerie Mansion. Ooh, ha, ha, ha. Home to a serial killer who used to kill prostitutes and others and get rid of them in the Erie Canal, which is close by. That guy. And now it's a bed and breakfast. It's actually the Ely Mansion. Bill Ely, the Ely family. But in... Mark calls it the Eerie Mansion. Mark Wright, the owner of it, right? And it's a B&B. Hey, man, he converted these 12,000 square foot building, unbelievable size, decorated it with crazy cool stuff. He's got a drag racing motorcycle right in the main hall there. The woodwork on the furniture is intricate and in detail. And the antiques he has, all the cool stuff. The place is crazy. It's got a room full of coffins. It's got another room full of alligator skins. It's got a room with a dance pole and two king-size beds sewn together. And all of them are suites. So you rent the whole suite, the kitchen, you know, all the stuff that you get, the bathroom, the whole bit. One of them has a sauna, the sauna suite. So, yeah, it's the place to go hang out if you're going to go hang out on Halloween, I guess. But that's the second place we did. Came out with pictures, EVPs, amazing stuff, amazing evidence, hardcore, right? But nonetheless, it's the energy. And at one time, I think it was maybe the second time we were there, we're packing up the gear, and I was on the second floor in Bill Ely's mother's summer bedroom, you know, her name was Eugenia, and just packing up the gear, you know. And I had that awkward feeling, and I looked over, and I basically saw the shadow figure walking across, like, in front of the windows, going from one area to the other. And it makes you feel like, it gives you chills. It's like, woo, you know, it's not scary. It's more like, wow, you know, you just saw something. You just understood something about, like, what is that? And what's the deal, you know, and why are they here? And all that other stuff, you know. And this guy, Mark, this is another phenomenon that I've run into a few times where people, for no reason whatsoever, got drawn into these buildings and these locations that were bombed out, broken down buildings, and they brought them back to new again. And this is not the first time I've ever seen that, but hit this building. I think he paid $75,000 for it. Was a broken down mess. It was turned into a different apartments over, like a tenement over the years, and it was wrecked. The windows were smashed out. He got it basically because it was a place nobody wanted. This dude put over $700,000 into that building, probably more by now, and did such an amazing job of restoring it. He restored the building to its glory with a drag racing motorcycle in the living room. You know what? You can't get a weirder situation than that. Or maybe you can. I know some people. I know some people. But the reality is, it exists. And also, the building had the two, the chef and the butler. One guy was Chinese, the other guy was Japanese. They were always fighting. And when the family was, and this is like around 1913, somewhere around there, when the family was down in New York City and they would stay at the Waldorf Astoria, and they had a lot of, there was a lot of information about them at the time. They were a very wealthy family. You know, the one Eugenia married, who was not Bill Ely's father, was the owner of Clyde Glassworks. So they had made Tiffany glass and all that. So they had the bucks at that time. Anyway, these guys were down in the city when one of their servants shows up. I think his guy name was Moiken Maeda. Might have been Maeda. The Japanese guy showed up, and he said that his father's in Japan, sick, and he needs to go back right away. The family gave him some money, bought him a ticket, and he took off, right? So then, before that happened, though, the family had gotten a call, and one of the neighbors was concerned and was trying to contact the family because they saw the chef and the butler chasing each other around on the lawn with a butcher knife and some kind of cleaver, right? So the Japanese guy leaves. His family returns weeks later. They smell a nasty smell in the house. They go up to the third floor where the servants' quarters were, and here's the headless body of the Chinese dude laying on the ground, you know? So, and that's one of the most active rooms, obvious reasons, right? They didn't find the head until a couple of months later because that particular servant didn't stay in the house. He had some kind of place, a room that he rented down the road. And then they smelled the nasty smell coming from a bag in that room, and they found the head. He kept the head of the dude and put it in the bag, and that was in that room. We also investigated that place because now it's a grocery store. So, yep, what a difference a day makes. But so that room, so this guy, Mark, has got a daughter. The daughter comes home from college, and then she wanted to come up to the mansion with a couple of her friends because it's got such a notorious reputation, right? And then she's like, well, we're going to sleep in the servants' quarters, you know. Mark said 2 o'clock in the morning, all three girls ran out of the mansion in their underwear screaming that whatever they experienced, they still haven't talked about to this day. What they experienced up there, it wasn't good, right? And we've done investigations and concentrated on that room. And we got a little of this, a little of that. I got a feeling that it's more of a situation where if you're alone, that's when the stuff starts really happening. When you have groups of people, it's very hard, and they don't necessarily want to come forward as easily with large groups of people, you know. So, but that's another reason to check out the Eerie Mansion if you're ever going to check a place out. So, shadow figures, yep. And then also frequent electrical problems, lights turning on and off, appliances turning on and off, all that other stuff you can all attribute to some ghostly activity. The feeling of being touched by unseen hands or pushed. You know, people that were pushed down the stairs. How's that? Or laying in bed and then feeling like someone's sitting on top of you, pushing down with their hands. That too. How about unusual smells such as unexplained perfume scents, flowers, cigars, cigarettes, food, or even the stench of death and decay? You know, that's how they come across to you, though, sometimes, is that scent, that odor, that smell, you know, their perfume or something that they were known for. That's a way of communication, you know, and when you start smelling that, you might think, okay, you know, there's something going on. So then you want to be able to communicate back, and that's easy. You just have to think about the good times, think about the good moments, think about the love, you know, think about the things that you missed most from those people, the void that has been created, you know. I mean, It's just something that if you do that, especially if you have like an item that person owned and you go to bed with it next to you and you think of those good moments as you're falling asleep, you might have some really good dreams about that person. They might be able to come forward to you and connect with you in some way, right? So, and also waking up between 3 a.m., 4 a.m., or sensing dread. The only time I get the sense of dread is before some huge major cataclysm happens in the world, you know. So if I say, like, man, I'm really, like, you know, things feel pretty dark, or, you know, something wicked this way comes, something like that. Yeah, it does, man. So, listen, go back to 2019, New Year's Eve. I did a show, and listen to that show if you want to hear what was coming. Okay, so, but, you know, waking up between 3 and 4 a.m., see, the veil is very thin at those times. It's not just 3 to 4. It's more like 2 to 4, you know, or even depends on where, too. I think it's because where you are in that location where it's 2 o'clock or 3 o'clock in the morning, most of the people around are asleep. While people are asleep, it's like having computers offline. And then there's more bandwidth for you to use. There's more Wi-Fi, isn't there? Things get faster and better in the electronic world. And I think it's very much the same thing. When people are awake and online, the energy is very different than at night, in the dead of night. So, you know. And also the feeling of emotions in your home. Grief, sadness, happiness, joy, whatever. You might just walk into a pocket of it and you don't know. So, I was going to talk about celebrities tonight and their stories. I'm running out of time, but let's do a couple, man. Lisa Rinna. I don't know who the hell it is. She must be like one of those like soap opera people. I don't know most of these people. You can tell I don't watch this type of stuff. Well, the reality TV star explained that she believed in ghosts after several instances of strange behavior during an appearance on Celebrity Ghost Stories on March of 2015. I've never seen that show either. Rinna detailed how she used to feel a breeze going behind her in an old house that she lived in with her husband, Harry Hamlin. Didn't that guy kill himself? Jenna Bush Hager oh, God, that's Jenna Bush. That's George Bush's daughter. Blah. In 2018, Hager told her Today co-host, Hoda Kotb, about feeling like the White House was haunted when she lived there. She noted hearing 1920s piano music as clear as day coming out of the fireplace. There was also moaning coming from the Kennedy bedroom. Mwah. I made that up, but there probably is. So, Mike Kotler, he said, I'm from the South, and there's a lot of things that happen in the South that don't happen anywhere else. Really? So, he's saying there's things that happen there that don't happen anywhere else on the planet or the universe. The South. All right. I would like to understand that statement. The Luke Cage star described an incident that occurred night after night, which his mother explained as a spirit being attracted to his energy. When I was a kid, I used to have this thing that was sitting on my chest when I would sleep, and it was keeping me from getting up, and I couldn't open my eyes, and I would struggle. I couldn't breathe very well. His mom's like, oh, that's okay. That's just a demon. And then, by the way, I just talked about a story just like that from Hammondsport, actually. And so it does happen elsewhere. His mom, that's okay. It's just a spirit trying to get a hold of you. It's just a spirit trying to kill you. That's all it is. Lily Collins, let's see. Woohoo, look at that. Lily Collins, she said, I discovered that 3 a.m. is the time when the veil of the realm of the thinnest one can be visited. Bah! That's all she has to say. Look at these girls. It looks like some Playboy chicks. Holly Madison and Bridget Marquard. I don't know if it's something that's following me around. Madison shared with Nylon in August of 2021 about her history with the paranormal. She said, "My house in L.A., I gotta say it like her, my house in L.A. is almost 100 years old. There's all kinds of voices and doors opening and disembodied voices. I enjoy it, though. It's like entertainment." That poltergeist, get out, pushes you down the stairs. Like, it's always fun to be pushed down the stairs. It's fun. Oh, my God. I could think of other enjoyment, but hey, man, whatever floats your boat. Maybe she should be a ghost hunter, right? And how about, what is this, Ariana Grande? Ariana Grande had a terrifying supernatural encounter following a visit to Stull Cemetery in Kansas City, which is known as one of the seven gates of hell on earth. Did you think that there would be a gate of hell on earth in Kansas City? Yeah, I guess. I'll say yes. I'll vote for yes, man. Okay. She said, "I felt this sick, overwhelming feeling of negativity over the whole car, and we smelled sulfur, which is a sign of a demon. Or a really nasty homeless person that's living there."
Did you call me the demon, man? What the hell?
Oh, no. It's Joe Montaldo, the demon. Bah. But she said later weird things would happen to Grande when she heard whispers one night in bed, along with disturbing images like red shapes of this massive black matter. Yeah, it probably followed her home. So, okay. Anyway, I don't think we have time for one more. Do I got time for one more? How about Emma Stone, the really hot, supposedly hot? I don't think she's all hot. Then. Emma Stone, the Amazing Spider-Man actress, claimed that in July of 2014, interview with David Letterman, that her dead grandfather was haunting her and hilariously leaving her some pocket change. "My grandfather leaves quarters. It's just amazing," Stone claimed. "It's him. It's absolutely him." She added that she had never met this late relative of hers. "It's exactly like that. But it's that, it's him. She knows it's him." Okay, whatever. I'm going to end it there. Quarters, I don't know. If anybody's in beyond, you can leave me some $100 bills, man. You know, a few thousand of them would be really nice. A suitcase, you know, something like that, dropping down from a drug plane, having to land in my yard. Anything like that, man. Anything, you know. So, quarters, not so much. I'm going to end it there. This is me on Discovery Paranormal. Have a wonderful and safe Halloween, really. And tune in to United Public Radio Network on Halloween night. You're going to have all the ghouls and ghosts and zombies, especially some Canadian zombies, man. Although, and Satanists too, on the Halloween show. And Joe and I are going to have to just keep people at bay and battle them back, man, as they're going to do their seances. And we're going to
And there will be booze involved as well.
We're going to be booze and whatever. And we're actually going to do a seance of old of guests and also hosts on the network, man. We figure that's a nice tribute to them on a Halloween night. But I will see you guys on that Halloween show. But for me, this is me on United Public Radio Network, Discovery Paranormal, keeping it real. See you guys next week. Bye. On Halloween. And I'll show my face on